Explosive is the story of Britain's leading forensic explosive scientists who for nearly three decades investigated some of the most prominent national and international criminal bomb attacks in history. Cliff Todd devoted his life to bringing bomb makers to justice. He and his colleagues at the Ministry of Defence's Forensic Explosive Laboratory are the unsung heroes of terrorist bomb attacks. The men and women in white suits who appears together, who planted the bombs, what a device consisted of and how the perpetrators might give themselves away, all the way from Britain under being attacked by the IRA to Islamic extremists inspired at Al-Qaeda, plus the Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, the Bali nightclub bombings of 2002, of course, and the 7/7 onslaught in central London. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from the UK, author of Explosive, the man himself, Cliff Todd. Cliff, good morning to you.
Morning.
Good to have you with us. For those who don't know exactly what a forensic explosives officer or scientist does, just explain a little bit about the role that you and many other men and women play.
Right. Well, basically, when a bomb goes off or there's an explosion from an unexplained cause, people from my lab and my line of work would go along in order to try and piece together what happened. Was it actually a bomb? What kind of bomb might it have been? Who might have put it out? All with the aim of giving the police and security forces the information that's useful to them to go and try and catch the perpetrators, and also in cases where bombs don't go off, which fairly frequently they didn't, so then we'd liaise with the bomb disposal, who would make it safe, and then we'd take it apart and look at it in great detail again to try and find evidence that will help the police and other security people find the perpetrators.
And what attracted you to becoming a member of the Forensic Explosives Laboratory? What led you into that particular line of investigation, as it were?
Well, I just applied for a job and job advert. I was in the civil service in a completely different part and looking for something else. Saw an advert and just thought, well, that sounds like it might be interesting. Went along for the interview and went on from there.
So for the uninitiated, whenever we see the aftermath of bomb attacks, for example, something like the attacks that we saw in London, it just seems a huge amount of devastation. Where on earth do you begin? Because, you know, with a large bomb, say the Baltic bombings or the bombings in London, it just seems everything has been blown to, and this is a technical term, smithereens. Yes.
It is a bit like that, but there is an order to things that you can try and bring to the scene. To collect vast quantities of debris in collaboration with the police. The police will organise equipment to do that, but you organise the scene into separate zones. So if it's a large bomb, for instance, there will be a large crater, so that gives you the seat of the explosion, if you like. If it's that large, it's clearly vehicle-borne because, you know, you can't carry it, so you have to have a vehicle to move it in. So you can work forward from there. If it's in a road, well, unlikely the thing is just parked across the road, so it's in a line. So if the bomb is behind, say, a cab of some sort, then parts are going to be, the engine's going to be projected down the road. Things are going to go in the other direction behind it. You can look in, you know, things will travel in certain directions and things of a certain size will tend to travel a certain distance. So you can follow those basic rules and then start looking at certain areas of, you grid the scene and then look at certain areas, debris from certain areas. But it's a very painstaking process. It takes a long time, that.
And presumably certain techniques or certain ways of making explosives or certain explosive devices or certain explosives themselves that I use will point you to the perpetrator, I'd imagine.
To some extent, yes, absolutely. And different explosives have different characteristics. They'll cause different types of damage. So that'll give you a start. And then you do a lot of chemical analysis for traces, for traces of explosives in the lab. So we can take samples from scenes and on certain areas find very, well, vanishingly small sometimes amounts of explosive, different types of explosives. And as you say, different types might lead you in different directions. So 7-7 was particularly difficult because it was a completely new kind of explosive, which we had never seen before, an improvised explosive. And we had never seen that before. And that made things very difficult at the start because we couldn't find any of the things we'd normally have expected to find.
What in particular was different there? Because I imagine it, because I was going to, my next question was going to be about your time against the provisional IRA. And the fact that it was almost like a cat and mouse game between bomb makers, bomb disposal experts, and forensic scientists. So, because you kind of knew, and they were trying to keep one step ahead and come up with, you know, more fiendish devices, as it were. But with the 7-7 attacks, which obviously claimed, was it 56 lives in the end?
52 plus 50, four bombers. Yes.
Yeah. So what was so different and so sort of startling about that particular atrocity?
Well, as I say, the type of explosive used, Pyra, the IRA, tended to use, not always, but mostly, they used commercially available explosives or a particular type of improvised explosive using ammonium nitrate. So we knew that, and those we knew to a large extent what we'd be looking for in those. Now, 7-7 was completely different. Also, it was a suicide bombing and aiming for mass casualties, which by and large, I won't say never, but by and large, the IRA didn't go for mass civilian casualties. I mean, I don't think they were concerned if people got hurt, but that wasn't the object of the exercise. Whereas on 7-7, the object of the exercise was to kill as many people as possible.
Mm. And if you're dealing with somebody who's a suicide bomber, presumably it makes it, because if it's a bomb like in the way that the IRA mainly planted, which is to cause disruption, damage, property and or goods and or munitions, and people getting hurt was a secondary concern, then they want to look after themselves as well to make sure it doesn't go off in their faces. But obviously with a suicide bomber, presumably it's a whole different modus operandi.
Yes, initially we looked for all the usual things we'd expect to find, and we didn't find any of them, and that was a concern to start with. The big step forward there for us was actually the finding of a bomb factory up in Leeds, Bradford, and that was really... it's a while ago, so I'm forgetting things, but that plus the finding of the car that some of them had travelled down from Leeds in was left at Luton Station. And that car was found, and that had also a lot of material in it that, again, pointed us in particular directions.
When you have something like the 7-7 bombings, or the horror that was Lockerbie, and it makes the international news, it's around the world, as opposed to, and I'm not designing it, but as opposed to say, an attack that would take place in the mainland in the UK or in Northern Ireland itself, is the pressure increased because the outrage is obviously magnified because of the slaughter, the huge loss of life?
Yes, it is. That does make a difference, but you try to put that out of your mind. There is also more pressure when it's of major international concern, like in Lockerbie. Clearly, there are lots of other people and agencies involved there, and that does add to the pressure. It was our lab that did the forensic explosives work on Lockerbie, but I should make it clear that wasn't my case. I was in the lab at that time, but I was very junior, so that wasn't my case. The two people who did the work on that, which was a superb, well, it was a masterclass in how to go about such things, was Alan Faraday and Dr. Tom Hayes. They were the two people. I'd just like to make that clear.
And with cases like that, or say the Bali bombings, which is 20 years ago, hard to believe. Did you go up to Lockerbie, or did you go out to Bali to survey, or was the material sent back to you in the labs?
Well, the people, I didn't go to Lockerbie. I did go to Bali, but yes, a lot of the material does in both cases, particularly from Lockerbie, came back to the lab. Certainly Alan Faraday did go to Lockerbie and joined with other people there, largely in that case from the AAIB, the Air Accident Investigation Branch. They were instrumental in the first phase of that, in examining parts of aircraft, because that's their business. Then they would hand over bits that they thought, maybe significant, but appeared to be showed damage that wasn't really from just apparently from a plane crashing into the ground.
The Bali bombings, I mean, I guess I said 20 years ago, but that must have been particularly difficult because, Bali, beautiful island, the majority of the victims were young people just having a good time out, and obviously there was horrendous tragedy. How do you divorce yourself from the horrendous scenes that you're seeing and get on with doing a job? And I know we talk about people suffering from stress and trauma when they've been in combat, if they've been engaged in fighting, but that's going to have an effect presumably on yourself and your staff as well.
Yes, to some extent, of course it will do. You could ask the same question, I suppose, of emergency responders, paramedics and firemen and so on, responding to very gruesome accidents and so on. To me, those guys, they get that, through a career. I mean, yes, Bali and 7/7 and others were horrible scenes to attend, but over a career of getting on for 30 years, the number of times that I was exposed to that kind of devastation really is very small, just a handful of times that I was exposed to that. So how do you deal with it? Everyone's different, I suppose, but you just try and switch off and focus on what you need to do and what things you can do to find some information that's going to be useful to the police. It can be difficult, for sure, and you do have to keep an eye out for your staff. In those cases, to see, try and make sure that they're not suffering too badly from that.
When you're putting, you know, putting all these different elements together to try and build a picture of what happened, what was used, I suppose at the point where you've got to get into the mindset of the people who are making these explosives. What did you, do you sort of, is there a type? Is there a sort of, you know, a method that these bomb makers use? And obviously are some of them more proficient than others? And you can spot a mile off when it is somebody who is perhaps, I don't know how to put this, but new to their game, as opposed to somebody who's been, you know, building explosive devices, if, you know, for the Northern Ireland Theatre for the best part of, you know, of a decade.
Yes, there are clear differences. I would say that, as far as I'm concerned, anyway, you will read in books sometimes about, you know, the game between the investigator and the bomber, and the investigator will know the particular signature of this particular bomber, and he'll say, oh yes, that's John Adams, and that's and Andy Smith, and
yeah.
That I didn't I would say that's it's not like that, but there are very clear differences between somebody who's just maybe got a grudge against someone and they've decided to try and build a bomb and they've gone on the internet and looked at it. And then at the other end of the scale, you've got people like the IRA, who were pretty much professional bomb makers, and their stuff worked and worked well for them. So yes, there are clear differences there between those two extremes and all the people in between. They're not all terrorists. They're not all professionals. They're, you know, people doing things for sometimes, you know, personal grudges, and sometimes just for nobody knows. I'm not even sure they would know why. They just decide on a day, I'm going to do this.
I mean, presumably the internet has made bomb making, or at least the information to getting that stuff together, you could argue, made it a lot easier for people.
Yes, yes, in some ways, but it's kind of two-edged sword, because there's a huge amount of information out there on the internet, but a lot of it is rubbish or actually dangerous to the bomb maker. So yes, there is information, but if you're starting from zero, you're almost as likely to damage yourself or actually do no harm at all than cause an explosion in a place and at a time where you choose. So, that's a double-edged sword if you're going that route.
What was the case that gave you the most, if you like, professional satisfaction for you and the team when you went, this is how it happened, this is the elements, and you know, these are the people behind it?
Well, I'd have to say probably 77, and particularly 21-7 was the most satisfying outcome. I'd have to say that. There are lots of others, but yeah, I'd have to say that one. Where the bombers, or 21-7, the would-be bombers, were all caught and convicted, and that's the point. Getting a conviction, the thing, particularly for 21-7, that was always going to be a little difficult because they didn't work properly. So the natural line of defense there is, well, they were never intended to work. And we were able to show to the court satisfaction that actually they were intended to work. They just got it ever so slightly wrong.
What do you hope that people will take from the book and will learn from the book, and perhaps dispel that Hollywood invention that, oh yes, I know that's Paddy Adams because he uses this sort of timer?
Yes. I think the main takeout I would hope from the book is that there are a lot of people working behind the scenes who aren't ever really in the public eye. The public largely do not know they exist, but there are a lot of people working behind the scenes alongside police and security forces to to help them keep the public safe, essentially. But those people, they're doing it now. Their work, you know, that work continues, has continued, has been taken on by people in the lab. They're doing it now. And no doubt in other fields, you know, in public service, particularly towards keeping the public safe, there are those people, you know, working away and at times putting themselves in harm's way to do that, which, you know, the public, I think, well, they don't see and therefore don't really know of these people. So it's a bit of a shout out for them.
Well, it's a shout out that we're glad you were able to share with us. The book is called Explosive, Bringing the World's Deadliest Bombers to Justice. It's by Cliff Todd. It will be available as a virtual download from our own virtual bookstore. Cliff, thank you so much for your time today.